Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 26th of January. A great delight to have you on the program. We love having you here and being with us and talking, letting us talk to you and having you communicate with us through email and yelling at the radio or whatever it is, your smart speaker or however you're listening to us at this time. We welcome you and we thank you for being here. I'm going to introduce everybody to you and then we'll get started. Quick reminder that if you do want to join us, all you have to do is write to us. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we do love your letters. So keep them short, keep them to the point, and we'll get to as many as we possibly can. Alan Chartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
I am in the house. Unfortunately, I got up a little early this morning, around 1:35, something like that.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, that was early. And then I... you know, I waited around and I talked to David, and then I took my walk in the dark. I took my walk in the dark, and I forgot my light on my head. So now I was sort of...
Well, so it really was the dark.
Just in the dark, right? Yeah. Right. But the moon, I think there was some moon, right? And it looked pretty good. It looked pretty good. And so then I came back, and boy, am I tired.
I bet you are. I bet you are. I got up at like 2, and then I...
2's good.
And then I started to look and at the news, and I was looking at different stuff,
exactly.
I kind of went down the rabbit hole. But you're right, it was very bright out because of the moon. And but I'm glad you made it safely, even without your light.
And that's what I do. I believe in getting up early and going to sleep early at 7 o'clock,
yes,
or 6:30, something like that. And then I get up and I read all the papers. You know what I mean?
And you get caught up, and then sometimes you get so worked up, you can't go back to sleep, and that's the problem.
That's true.
Well,
oh my God, it's like being on the radio with Benjamin Franklin.
And by the way, Rosemary, he is my favorite. I love Benjamin Franklin.
one of our favorite founding fathers. Good
early
morning.
Early to bed, early to rise. I get it.
He was terrific. He was a terrific guy, and in so many ways I can't talk about.
Rosemary Armeo is with us. She was the interjector just then. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I said I was going to be calmer and less interrupting today, and I've already violated that. I'll try to do better.
We love you for what you do. It all looked good. All right. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is with us. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning to you. And the Empire Report's J.P. Miller, his site is also one of the, you know, I wake up to that and I have to read that, and that keeps me going for a good 45 minutes or so. J.P., good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
Well, thank you. Very nice to have you all with us and collected. Let's get started and start talking about what's happening in the world. Of course, the big story yesterday at 6:50 p.m., the House Democrats presented the article of impeachment. They walked the article of impeachment against President Donald J. Trump to the Senate. They formally delivered the article of impeachment, charging Trump with inciting the deadly insurrection at the Capitol. Democrats say they prepare to use the president's own words as evidence against him in a Senate trial next month. With solemn looks on their mask-covered faces, the 9 House impeachment managers walked over to the Senate shortly around 7 after 7 Monday to deliver the article against Trump, setting in motion his second Senate impeachment trial. While no final decisions on trial strategy have been made, House managers are concentrating on building their case around Trump personally, both what he said in the run-up to the January 6th attack and at a rally that day, and how his words were interpreted within the White House and outside of it. That, according to people familiar with the investigation and the deliberations. The impeachment managers and their advisors have been meeting daily, scouring hundreds of hours of evidence. And that includes all of the footage from social media sites such as Parler, where many of those involved in the insurrection on January 6th when they were saying that the president asked us to do that and so forth. So a lot of that going on. Meanwhile, Republicans saying that Lindsey Graham summing it up by saying there are only a handful of Republicans, and that is shrinking, who will vote against him. They would need 17 votes from Republicans if all 50 Democrats were to vote in favor of impeachment in the Senate. So, Alan.
Well, I'm going to be very interested in what Rosemary has to say, because she's a very good predictor. But what I'm thinking here is that that Lindsey Graham is right. They're not going to get the 17 votes. I think that's pretty clear, because if these people vote, the Republicans, who are still lined up unbelievably, huge numbers of them behind, not as many, but huge numbers behind Trump, will vote them out of office. And they don't want to do that. They would rather be unpatriotic. They would rather defy the Constitution and defile it. And they'd rather have their name on their tombstones for yet another time in office. Nevertheless, I have no doubt that that's what's going to happen, that they're not going to get a conviction. But what's good is that the American people will see the evidence. The American people will hear the words. The American people will see the evidence. And that cannot be helpful for the Republicans. So I think it's well worth doing, and I'm glad they're doing it.
Chief White House correspondent Caitlin Collins of CNN was able to snag an interview in the hallway of the White House with Joe Biden yesterday, which, just imagine that happening. But that's very cool. But he said, look, it's something that needs to happen. They probably don't have the votes, and yet it's still accountability. You must hold them accountable for what happened. So, Rosemary, what do you think?
Okay, so I also agree that there's no way they're going to get those votes. Using the president's own words was the strategy in the first impeachment hearing, and that did not work. It still came off in the Senate's so-called trial as, oh, the perfect phone call. And I think that was the same thing here. He didn't really say go and rip up the Capitol, so therefore he's innocent. But rather than that, I think what we're seeing shaping up is a senatorial plan to contest whether or not you can even have an impeachment when the guy's out of office. Of course, Mitch McConnell made sure that the trial could not start before he was out of office. But now that that's true, Senator Tom Cotton has already said, no, there's nothing in the Constitution about impeaching somebody after they're here. And we've seen signs that will go. That's a question that will go to the Supreme Court if they bring it, and that we will lose in the Supreme Court. We've already seen two signs that indicate that. One was that Justice Roberts says, no, I'm not presiding over this trial. The Constitution only says I preside over a trial of a president. This is not a president. And the second thing was that the court dropped the emoluments clause. This was for 4 years. It raged in courts about whether the president could profit off of money being paid by diplomats and foreign governments to his hotel. And then they dropped it. That got up to the Supreme Court, and then it was dropped because it's moot. He's out of office. So I predict those two things are signs that they do not want to take on presidential abuses. And I think that's what happened. So overall, it's a very dreary kind of prospect to me. I also agree with Alan that I still want to see it.
Or that they may, by the way, want to pay him back, some of those people who were put on the court. They defied him a couple of times. Now this is a good opportunity to do it. What interested me, Rosemary, is that there were no dissents. In other words, we're dropping it. Nobody thinks we shouldn't have dropped it. So on the court. And that puzzled me a little bit.
I think there's strong pressure from Roberts to keep this court out of politics. And of course, Donald Trump made that virtually impossible. Nobody thinks the court is free of politics, but John Roberts still is you gotta give him credit for that, because he's right. It should be free of politics. And so I think he brought a lot of pressure on new members to say, hey, go along on this one. You've got cover. We're all going to go, and this will be unanimous. But it's not a good sign for doing what many of us hoped would happen when Biden got in, that we would go back and revisit the abuses of the Trump age and fix them by law. That isn't going to happen with this Supreme Court.
Or with this Senate, or with this Congress right now. But it's possible that there will be a fix by the Congress, which is where it should be done.
So let's go to Mike Spain. Mike.
Yeah, I don't think Republicans, well, it's obvious that the Republican leadership in the Senate do not want this to come up for an up and down vote. So trying to get it declared unconstitutional is one way. I mean, this is a moment when the Republican Party is fracturing big time. I saw a cartoon in the Times Union today that has the Republican elephant sitting at a fork in the road. In one fork, it goes to Abraham Lincoln, and the other one goes to Donald Trump, and they have to decide what to do. And the Republican Party is split on this across America. I know that in Arizona, I know what's going on in Oregon and Texas, the state GOP have affirmed their support of Trump. They've in Arizona, they've criticized their own governor because he wouldn't go against the results of the election. Up in Oregon, they say, I mean, the party, the Republican Party in Oregon adopted a policy or a statement that says that the January 6th uprising was actually Democrats in a, what do they call it, a false flag.
False flag, right.
Yeah, trying to make Trump look bad. But ABC News and a Washington Post poll just a few days ago from January 10th to 13th discovered that 70% of Americans said the Republican Party should move away from Trump. And all across the country, thousands of Republicans in Florida, in Carolina, 7,500 Republicans in Arizona are leaving the party, are switching out to independents. And it's got to have them rattled. And this is a crossroads for the Republican Party. And I just don't know.
And compare that, and Alan touched on this a moment ago in his remarks, but the poll that said of those people who voted, and I think it's Gallup, but I'm not positive, a poll that said of those who voted for Donald Trump just 2 months ago, 73% of those people still support the president. So there is that playing into this as well. JP Miller.
There is that. Yes. I agree with what Mike said. I thought the New York Times article this morning was really interesting. They had kind of an informal poll of Republican senators. And the New York Times says that 27 Republican senators are going to support Trump no matter what. There are 16 undecided, and there are 7 with no response. And so I see a little window for a potential conviction. I think that, you know, the Republicans offering process-based objections and not openly defending Trump, that is, in my mind, a weak argument. And the most prominent person that has signaled that they're open to convicting Trump, or the most prominent Republican, is Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell just isn't any old U.S. senator. He's by far the most powerful Republican senator, the most respected Republican senator. And I agree with Mike in that the Republican Party is going to make a decision here in the next week or two. Are the Republicans going to be married to Trump for the next 4 years? Because if there's the specter that he's going to run again in 2024, that's it. You know, the Republicans, it is the Trump Party. And they have an opening to break with Trump. Trump gave them this opportunity to break with him. And I think it's possible they do. The other thing I noted out of the New York Times article is Trump's lawyer's name is Butch Bowers. And that sounds like he's going to have a character on Saturday Night Live. I'm excited to see this character Butch Bowers. That's going
to hard to believe that a lawyer in South Carolina would be named Butch Bowers. Yeah,
with a taxi cab driver's hat on.
Yeah, but you know, he's an election law expert. He's not. I mean, he's not a litigator. He's not a criminal defense lawyer. He's an election law expert. So, if the defense for Trump in a Senate trial is going to be that, oh, yes, it was a rigged election, and yes, I won by a landslide, I don't think that's going to play very well with the Republican members of the Senate.
Now, we have about 2 minutes before we go to break. Rosemary, I was thinking of you on Friday as we were discussing this. Judith Henk posited that one of the things she agreed that it would be tough to get the votes. However, that between now and the middle of the trial, say mid-February, it's a long time, and news is coming out every single solitary day learning more about what happened on January 6th. Do you see a scenario where learning about what happened and who was involved could change the outcome.
I had originally said the same thing, that a delay wasn't such a bad thing because we're finding out more and more. But what I see actually happening now that we're in that delay is that the heat and the passion of that outbreak has dissipated. It seems a lot less scary and dangerous than it was, even when we're reading stories about how that's the opposite. And we're seeing Republicans realizing that, whoa, what are we doing here? We got to back away from this. And I'm sorry, JP, I know how smart you are on politics, but the idea of Mitch McConnell voting for conviction, no way, no way. He's talking a good game, but he is not going to make that vote.
I think you're right, and I think you're right, and I'm really interested in what you guys have to say about Republican senators. Look, these guys are prostitutes. There is no question about it. If they go wrong on this, if they break anti-Trump, they lose their seats. Now, would it be good to be a patriot? Of course, but will they? Probably not. Does anybody disagree with that?
Well, the pressure might be on them.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I just think that if there's so much evidence and I agree with you, Rosemary, and with Judith Eng, a couple of weeks from now, the momentum could shift the other way with more revelations, and that might turn public opinion, and then they'll be responding to public opinion, and they'll be on a tightrope.
You know, the same thing happened in the first impeachment hearing, too, where as you got further away from the phone call, more and more information came out about how, yeah, he had really held up the payments to Ukraine. Yeah, he had really said this to that person. And it did not, still did not have the effect. This is political, not legal. I'm done.
3, 2, 1. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Dave writes to us and says, as the panel is aware, Trump, his followers, and his many fellow Republican politicians claimed vindication after Trump was not convicted in his first impeachment trial. I'm curious if anyone on the panel has concerns about the possibility of Trump and his followers claiming vindication should he not be convicted in the Senate impeachment trial this time around as well.
They definitely will. Of course.
Seems inevitable, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Of course they will. On the other hand, he lost the presidential election with all his lying lies. It's one thing to lie because, everybody just says, there he goes again.
Kevin says, why wasn't the reality of this continuing quagmire in Congress not even brought up during the Herculean effort to get Biden elected and the two senators elected in Georgia? Democrats get the quote-unquote majority in the Senate, but McConnell still rules. We should have known. The favorability of our Congress was below that of Trump at the start of his term. Where is it now? This is not a representative government. It will bring us back to, why do I bother to vote? Hmm. You want that one?
It is a risk that people are just going to.
One at a time. Go ahead.
I mean, people.
Yes, okay. Please. Cough one at a time. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it is a risk that this is just going to disillusion more people from being involved and interested in the political process and disengage from it. And personally, the idea that Trump is on the front page of all the papers today again, after the election is over and Biden's in place and we got a lot of things to worry about with the COVID and with the economy, the last thing I want to be looking at is stories about Donald Trump. And yet, I don't know how you avoid it. How can you not at least try to reconcile the horrible things that have happened? You can't have healing until there's disclosure, until there's acknowledgement. And even if it doesn't go their way, the Democrats have to do this. They had to do it last time.
Joe, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a note from Tom. Who
yep.
says,
just get on mic.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. You have
there
to
you
do
go.
That.
Yep.
And that's one of the things about the radio. Yeah. No, it's one of the things about the radio. You got to talk into the microphone, not leave it on your lap and think you're talking into your cell phone and that'll do it. Okay. Post-Senate trial action, says Tom, regardless of how the Senate votes on the article of impeachment, can and would the DOJ, Department of Justice, and Attorney General still pursue criminal charges against Trump? Or does an acquittal in the Senate preclude any further criminal liability for Trump for the crime he committed on January 6th? Good letter. The answer is the DOJ can do whatever they want. They can indict him, and it doesn't matter whether he's avoided a charge in the Senate, an impeachment charge.
And who is that letter from?
Tom. That's from Tom.
Okay.
It says, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, okay. I just need to strike it for my record. Go ahead.
I think it's a I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fine.
Okay. And or does the acquittal in the Senate preclude any further criminal liability for Trump? Absolutely not. Now, the other question that he's raising is, can the DOJ and Attorney General still pursue criminal charges? Of course they can. Nevertheless, Trump has made it fairly clear he wants out of this. And the whole idea of less Trump is probably a good one.
We go to Kevin, who says, I'm fuming at Schumer's messaging on the floor of the Senate and in the press. McConnell obstructed for the past 6 years, and the fact that Schumer is allowing McConnell to control the messaging is awful. McConnell saying there is no mandate is laughable, considering he claimed one last time, despite losing the popular vote, every bill that can get passed with Vice President Harris's vote should be a given. Rosemary.
Well, I have the opposite point of view of this. I think that the Democrats are messaging wrong. They're saying right now, oh, Mitch McConnell folded. Oh, he's giving up his demand for a promise on filibuster. No such thing.
Right.
He has calculated that the Democrats can't decide themselves. The two senators from Arizona and West Virginia said, we're not voting to get rid of the filibuster, and Joe Biden is against it. So he wisely said, okay, I'll demur. He now has a chit against the Democrats saying, hey, I gave the last time. If you really want unity, you have to give the next time. He got exactly what he wants, which is the rules under the 2001 power sharing agreement, and the filibuster holds. So how Mitch McConnell folded, I cannot figure. And as for us being surprised, no one's surprised. McConnell spent 6 years as majority leader, but he was a heck of a, for 8 years before that, he was a heck of an obstacle to Obama as minority leader. He knows this job very well. And he will, and if anybody thought he would not revert to form, that's crazy.
Yeah, but
he is thinking, you know, right now of the I think, answer this to him, and then I'll shut up. I'm sorry. He's thinking of the election 2 years from now. He lost those two seats in Georgia. He wants to get back in power.
Alan?
That's all true. However, look, McConnell is not giving anything up. I mean, the fact of the matter is he knew that the Democrats didn't have the votes to do away with the filibuster. So he, quote, went along with it. And the other thing is he didn't look very good because there was no peaceful transference of power, which ticks off an awful lot of the American people because they lost the election. They're in the majority. The Democrats are in the majority right now. So he gets what he wants, and let's move on.
JP, anything on that?
Yeah, I agree with what Rosemary and Allen said. I also think that both parties benefit in a way from the filibuster, in that when the Democrats are going to likely pass another virus relief package, it's possible that the Republicans won't want to go along with it, and they will have the Democrats pass it with 51 votes, and they'll say, oh, man, you know, they passed it with only 51 votes. This is ridiculous. So that's an example of where the Republicans would benefit from it. An example where the Democrats would benefit from the filibuster is they, you know, Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer, they do not want to pass the most progressive aspects of their party's agenda, like immigration
right.
reform. And so they can use that and say, you know what, the Republicans are filibustering immigration reform. We can't do it. But and that will help them by not passing that the most progressive stuff that will help them in the midterms protect their majority.
I agree with that. Look, this guy, Biden, President Biden, is obviously opposed to the filibuster. He said so in the past. And the reason is for just what JP said. And that is he does not want to get trapped by such a progressive agenda that he, as a moderate, can't win again, or that Kamala Harris can't win again.
Let's go back to letters before we have to take a break in just a few moments. Bill says, I had hoped that Letitia James would have filed charges against Trump at 12:01 last Wednesday. Any idea what the holdup is? JP, anything on that?
I haven't seen the timeline, I don't know. I imagine that Tish James and also Cy Vance and other prosecutors, I imagine they're waiting until after the impeachment trial to see how that shakes out, see what evidence comes out. I don't think it would benefit them to have everybody charging him at the same time. The United States House of Representatives, that's a big charge, an impeachment charge, and I imagine they're going to let that play out and see what happens.
Alan? Mm.
No, I think that's very wise. I was going to say something, but as soon as JP, in his usual way, came on with great clarity, I had nothing to say.
Vincent writes and says, impeachment will only further empower Trump. When he is acquitted again, he will be endlessly crowing about he and all his followers were persecuted. Michael says, I wanted to give Chuck Schumer a shout-out after his interview last night on Rachel Maddow. I've been disappointed by Senator Schumer at times, but how refreshing to see a Senate majority leader who's enthusiastic about working to solve the nation's problems, and what a contrast to McConnell and his years of dour obstruction. Angela says, I heard a former senator say yesterday that if a secret vote for impeachment occurred, Trump would undoubtedly be convicted. Constitutionally speaking, can they propose a secret vote be held in order to protect the identity of Republicans leaning toward impeachment?
That's one of the worst ideas, and we discussed it yesterday, and I'm going to say it again today. The House of Representatives, or the Senate of the United States, the whole idea is that the American people have to know what their legislators are doing. Secret votes stink.
Mary says, 2 points. How can the Senate serve as the jury in Trump's trial when they themselves were the victims? 2, is it possible to change the Department of Justice's policy of not prosecuting a sitting president?
Well, it's not a criminal trial. It's an impeachment charge and a conviction, which is a political process. So the comparison to a legal process is just wrong, I guess.
Anybody else on that? Rosemary?
Well, definitely it's possible to change the Department of Justice's memo. It should have been changed when Trump was in office. But Alan is right. It has nothing to do with this current case.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller make up our gang this morning. We welcome your letters. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion, and we welcome your letters. Jim writes to us and says, as sorry as I am, he won't be convicted. I'm kind of happy that he will run again, as I believe it will fracture the party enough that Democrats can maintain the White House, assuming Biden gets stuff done in the next 2 years. We go to Ricky, who says, since Donald Trump is no longer president, does it really matter whether or not 17 Republican senators vote for removal? To me, it makes no difference. But if they do get 17 Republicans, that would be excellent for America and for the future of the Republican Party.
Well, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a Republican Party move, whatever is the most politically expedient. And already, as I think JP pointed out, the 2022 midterm elections is well underway.
Yay.
No, it's very dangerous for the Democrats. We know that the party out of power usually picks up seats in the off election. Now, that may change this time, but that's what happens.
Phil writes to us and says, I want Schumer to get rid of the filibuster until before the midterms. I'm sick of the Republicans being the only party that plays hardball. I know this is slimy, but how long are we going to allow the Republicans to carry out such maneuvers to enact their agendas? We need to do this so that we can make progressive changes to our elections and tax systems, among others, so we can help the working class. JP, any thoughts on that?
I go back to the Democrats are benefit from the filibuster. They benefit from it. Chuck Schumer is not interested in necessarily passing, you know, super progressive legislation. Chuck Schumer wants to expand his majority in 2022. That's his goal. It's not necessarily to to pass progressive legislation.
Rosemary?
Well, I sympathize with the letter writer. I would like to see the filibuster go and a whole bunch of great legislation pass. But I felt that way when Harry Reid first got rid of it, first weakened the law and said, we've got to get federal judges in. And the result over time, because McConnell plays the long game, is something like 250 federal judges who are ideologues before they're scholars. And that's bad for the country. So aside from what it does for Democrats, in the long run, the Senate should work through bipartisanship. And that's harder. But I think Biden has the right idea. And also, you know, the agreement is now, if you're going to make a slimy move, as the writer suggests, do it after the Republicans have obstructed a whole bunch of important legislation and then say, okay, now we have no choice. So it's not like I'm saying keep it forever, but I would keep it for now.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think that they have to hold it up there as a possibility, and that itself can be a club to get some bipartisanship, and then if not, then they'll have to go to end the filibuster.
Let's go to a couple more letters here, and then we'll change the subject. Russ says the fact that too few Republican senators will vote to convict Trump is largely irrelevant. It is imperative, though, that the impeachment prosecution thoroughly air out the Putin-style disinformation campaign to discredit the election results in four states. The outcome of this real trial will determine the course of government for years to come and will mark a line in the sand against creeping Russian fascism in America. Is that a bit too optimistic, Alan?
No, well, there's no question that Putin has suffered a tremendous loss here, and that Trump's unexplained affinity with Putin is important. I think part of what the letter writer is saying is all old stuff. Now, the real question is the impeachment, and just on the face of it, whether or not he is convicted on that impeachment charge, and he ain't going to be. But once again, I say let this all be held up before the American people to see exactly what he did. And we all know what those pictures showed on January the 6th. Right. We know that. So if a Republican votes to sustain the president here, I think they put themselves in some danger.
It's hard to believe that was 3 weeks ago. And as Mike indicated earlier, that at least the state of Oregon, they're already trying to rewrite that history, which is just mind boggling, Mike. I mean,
you do hope that they'll come with evidence that shows it was that January 6th was was the culmination, or January 7th, 6th, I guess, was the culmination of months and months, even before the election, of efforts to use disinformation to undermine one of the most sacred processes to our democracy, and that is the free and fair election. And it was constantly hammered home, and it's demonstrated by the polls that people ate it. They drank it right down. And a lot of these congressmen, you know, we've said this, know darn well that it was not gamed and it was not, Trump didn't win, and he certainly, it wasn't stolen from him. But they are just demonstrating their fealty to Trump because they're so frightened, and they're just, that's all.
Rosemary, you were going to say something.
May I point out that that's not the charges being impeached on, even, Mike. This was insurrection. It had nothing to do with this hoax of an election fraud. What I worry about is Donald Trump may well serve to nullify the whole idea of impeachment. If you cannot convict a president on the charges brought against him and on the evidence brought against him, which were, in both cases, his own words, the testimony of the people who are in on it, and evidence that he tried to obstruct any other further information that would either explain or possibly even absolve him. It was just a complete shutdown of the investigative process. Impeachment becomes worthless. What does a president have to do to be impeached if not what Donald Trump has done?
It isn't shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but remember, the rules are different now than the impeachment 1 year ago. There's going to actually be video. There's going to be testimony. There's going to be compelling evidence presented. It is going to be very different. And without the, you know, with their own senator, you know, presiding over it, anything can go.
Okay, so what's the compelling evidence again?
Oh, it's the videotape. It's the and I think Rosemary.
Yeah, they're not Mike. They're not on trial. He's not on impeachment charges here for any other reason except that he got them to do it. So
he incited them.
Yes, incited them.
But part of that incitement is that he undermined the truth. And I think that becomes part of the case. And the Democrats have the levity to introduce all that.
But to to your point, well, to both of your points, you have on video, you have on tape, however it is collected now, digitally or otherwise. Yes, you have on there people who are storming the Capitol who are saying, "We're doing this for our president." So is that enough?
No. It's not enough. Hey, I'm with Mike from his lips to God's ear. I hope it happens. I just want to know.
Alan, I'm thinking of the Manson trial. Now, the defendants of that case said we did it because Charlie told us to, our God.
Right.
Similarly, he had a cult, too. And that was enough for a conviction. It was
exactly.
This was the murder of democracy.
That took a turn.
I think that's why you're seeing. Yeah.
that sounds like Malcolm Nance.
So if you change your tune here, Rosemary, are you saying now that he'll be convicted because you're holding it up to the Manson analogy?
You're just using that logic, right?
I'm using that logic. He should be convicted. I thought he should have been the last time. You're saying there's evidence this time. There was quite a bit of great evidence last time. A transcript
but
of
it wasn't
call,
introduced.
The testimony of the people in on the call. They didn't have a trial. They just stopped it. And I believe that's what they're going to try to do this time, too. They're going to say, nope, he's not a president. We don't have the constitutional right to try an ex-president. Oh, my God, that could go on forever. We could have a trial, an impeachment of Richard Nixon next week. How this is not what the forefathers thought about. And the truth is, I've been thinking, what did the forefathers foresee when they talked about impeachment? What did they? Is the Supreme Court going to look at that? Because it seems to me that what Donald Trump did the last time, a year ago, and this time, is exactly what they had in mind.
Let's see. We have
One last thing here.
Sure.
Does John Roberts not involve himself in the trial, which we know he's not going to, because he wants a free ticket, because this is going to go to the Supreme Court, this very question?
That could be. That's reasonable.
It is reasonable. I think he just didn't. He knows it's going to be highly, highly political, and he wants that court out of politics, at least for a brief respite.
JP, anything on this?
Which is ridiculous, because of course nothing is out of politics. Every time the Supreme Court makes a ruling, it's political. It goes one way or the other, right?
Yeah. I think he's certainly guilty. You know, he organized the party, he fired them up, and then when they ransacked the place, he refused to call the cops. I think it's a pretty simple case. The Republicans are going to rely on, well, he's not the president anymore, and that kind of process question. I also certainly hope that there's a 9/11 commission style report after this that shows all of these lunatics that ransacked the Capitol and invaded the Capitol. Where did they get all their information from? They were all fed this information from Facebook, Twitter, and Parler. And those social media companies, you know, Trump manufactures the deadly drugs, and Facebook, Twitter, and Parler, they distribute the drugs, and they should be held to account just like the president.
Let's just look at one thing really quickly here, and that is, if the president does something that is clearly unconstitutional, clearly despicable, on the last day of his office, there's no recompense, no political recompense? Is that what we're saying here?
That's what the Republicans are saying, yeah.
Yeah, I
agree, JP.
Well, they say the
process,
recompense is voting.
Yeah, well,
sorry, they say the recompense is voting.
Yeah, but then we have an impeachment process, and it's there because if somebody does something, if a president does something despicable, they can be impeached and convicted, but they cannot under this thinking because it's too late. They can do something awful.
The legal rationale is that the conviction of a president, an impeachment conviction, will enable the Congress to then bar him from future political office, and that is material and that is active. And that's why it all has legitimacy.
We got a note from a Janet who wrote to us and said, "This all makes my blood boil because I want the panel to address the matter that of all the perks of office that Trump is entitled to, if not impeached, the staff and the funding and the travel allowance and the setting up of a library. Also, I'm waiting for someone to deny the extra exorbitant Secret Service protection he endowed upon 14 people who are not entitled to it." So those are other issues.
His extended family is going to have Secret Service protection for another 6 months. And that is his prerogative. He could ask for it, and he did before he left office. But after 6 months, only he, Melania, his wife, and their 14-year-old son will have it. And when the son turns 16, he won't have it anymore either. But Trump and his wife will have it the rest of their lives.
I would like to say that while I hate Trump, and I made that clear, I do not begrudge him or his family Secret Service protection. I think the country is a mess right now, and the idea of him or some crazy going after even Donnie Jr., that's abhorrent. I don't begrudge that.
I know.
We just read about Fauci. Dr. Anthony Fauci had Secret Service protection because he was getting death threats and his family was getting death threats. I mean, it's a sad, sad commentary, but you're right, Rosemary.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss with our terrific panel, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can reach us. You know where we live. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org is where you send them. Panel,
Joe.
Yes, sir.
Joe, you've got to love Ray Graff's news, don't you? I mean, you know, the way that he delivers it, there's always a little something in there for those of us who admire his delivery when he said 1 to 3, and then he says inches, that is. I thought that was tremendous, tremendous insight.
Yeah. Good insight, good timing, brilliantly delivered as far as the timing goes.
Absolutely right.
Well, good morning, everyone. We welcome you back to the program. We have a lot to discuss, and we will continue to do that. Let me go to the letters here, and we'll roll on. Stephen says, Alan is right. So you can't impeach a president if on the last day of his term he gives enemies of the U.S. all the state secrets, reveals sensitive materials, etc. Come on, Republicans. The blue phone is ringing, and you can't let it go to voicemail. Sally says, how can the Republicans say that the consequence of Trump's misdeeds were punished by the vote if they contend that the vote was fraudulent? Does Melania still get Secret Service protection if she divorces Trump, which I think she will? That's the big question, isn't it, Rosemary?
I don't think she will. I think she made her deal and she's sticking with it. And she had great prominence for 4 years, and now she gets her privacy back. Why would she divorce him now?
Because she can't stand him? Is that a possibility?
She doesn't have to spend time with him.
Yeah, I'm so busy watching The Crown right now. I mean, they were married for years, and everybody's living in a different house in a different country. I don't, you know.
Right. But,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a different kind of thing.
It's a different world.
It's a matter of character.
Yes, absolutely. So this from Randy to Rosemary. The country is a mess, ? Who made it a mess, ? Why give the arsonist a break, ? I don't quite understand.
No, me neither.
The tone of the letter. Rosemary, do you understand it? Since it's directed to you?
Maybe she's not here.
Probably muted, but...
You know what I do? I quite frequently, when somebody says something to me that I don't understand, I just wrote back three letters, huh?
Or, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
I'm still waiting for Rosemary to... Oh, okay, maybe she's back now. No? I'm willing to come back to this if we think it's worth it. Let's see. Panel, do you agree that all or most of what has been causing the divisions we are seeing are caused directly by lies? Lying by a politician or the press to the public needs to have repercussions. There are none now. If this is allowed to continue, things will and are only getting worse. How are we, the public, supposed to have reality-based thought if the press and politicians are constantly lying? Also, the right keeps on many subjects saying the right needs to prove something didn't happen. We all know that you can't prove a negative.
Well, over the weekend, the
moving right along.
That was the perfect response, Mike.
Yeah, I know. Well, over the weekend, the Washington Post did a compilation of all the lies that it tracked, and it added up to something like 30,500 and something lies from Trump from day one to the end of his presidency. But the notable thing about it was the lies became more frequent and arced upward and really shot upward in the last year. And even in the second year, they were way up there. I mean, what has really happened, and you guys talked about it on the Media Project this week, Alan, and it's compelling. It's that there's no trust in no central trust in a common set of facts. Everybody just brings their own point of view to the table, and nobody agrees. And finding a way to restore trust in the media, trust in government, is a long slog.
It's true, and it's also true that we have to pay attention to what we're learning from Fox and what we're learning from, you know, any outlet. Speaking of which, I want to make a declaration that, if I may, Joe, that on this week's Media Project, Rick said that I almost killed him coming around a corner, and it was in the show. And you know, I said, "What do you mean I missed?" And then afterwards, he says, "You do drive a white car, don't you?" I said, "No, I drive a black car." He said, "Oh."
Oh, character assassination.
Reputation restored.
Exactly.
Oh.
That's why God made license plates. Rosemary, you are back. We got this letter from Randy. We can't figure it out. So it's to you. And it says, "The country is a mess, ? Who made it a mess, ? Why give the arsonist a break, ? Does that make sense to you? And are you still with us, or did I lose you again?
Maybe she's not back.
well, don't
I
you
see
think
her line? I have proof that she's there, but I don't know. But if she doesn't hear us, I guess it doesn't make any sense. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Don't you think Randy is basically saying what a lot of us have been saying? You know, regardless of how messy this is right now, we need some accountability. We have to have accountability before you can have any forgiveness and healing. And that just makes all the sense in the world. A lot of people would like not to have to go through this. It would be much more pleasant not to have to see Trump's name in the headlines.
Right.
But what choice have we got?
Here we are. Eric writes, "Any coup attempt that goes unpunished turns into a training exercise for the next one. I can't believe we are letting these marauders slip through the cracks because of their large numbers or because we are supposed to, quote unquote, heal. Lock them up. If there isn't enough room, let the nonviolent drug offenders out and put the violent people away." We got this letter from Richard. "It is extremely frustrating to watch Mitch McConnell seemingly still control his agenda. For years, he has blocked so many things because he was majority speaker and stopped so many bills from hitting the Senate floor. It seemed a big deal when the Democrats took control of all the branches of government, but it doesn't seem to matter. How can this one man have so much power?"
Well, that's
can
sort of true.
Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Yeah.
There you are.
Oh, thank goodness. And for everybody who's sending me notes, no, I was not on mute. I was on full live, and I couldn't be heard. It was a nightmare. I'm talking and no one was listening.
It was a trick.
Did you hear my multiple readings of Randy's note to you? So did it make sense to you?
I think that he's saying that Trump is the arsonist and how dare we let him get away with it or put him back into control. And so, yeah, but you got to talk to Republican senators, not to us on the roundtable. We're with you.
All right. Good answer. I mean, you had enough time to think of it, but good answer. Let's see. All right. I'm glad you're back. Let's talk about Janet Yellen. Senate confirms Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary as stimulus talks loom. Janet Yellen received bipartisan support, now faces a big challenge in confronting an economic threat that has caused financial hardship for millions of Americans. Confirmed yesterday and making history in the process. Rosemary, thoughts on Janet Yellen?
I love Janet Yellen. Smart, strong, intelligent woman. She's the best person for the job, just happens to be a woman. First time ever in our history. And the first story about her is not going to be about the fashion of her spouse. So goodbye, Mr. Mnuchin. Sorry to see you go. And I think one of her first actions will be to oversee Harriet Tubman on a $20 bill. Another victory for women. Yay.
An idea that not only would you have Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill, but you would also have her signing the bill. Her signature would be
her
on
signature.
The bill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on the bill.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. It's really good news. Janet Yellen was an excellent head of the Federal Reserve, and she came up for a new term in 2018, and Trump did not reappoint her, primarily because she was a woman and she was an appointee of Obama, regardless of how well she did her job. And then he put in Jay Powell, who ironically did a very good job and then ended up being in conflict with Steven Mnuchin, the Secretary of Treasury under Mr. Trump. And then now you have Janet Yellen and you have Jay Powell, who will be working together to try to take drastic action to bring this economy back. I think this is like one of the best confirmations. It's wonderful news.
Well, it could just be that the Republicans know full well that the economy is in shambles, that they're responsible. And they think that by putting in a Democrat or when putting in Janet Yellen, they are punting and saying, OK, this will help us, you know, not be held responsible for what came before.
JP.
I'm obviously really impressed with Janet Yellen. Unanimously approved in committee. Every single Republican voted for Janet Yellen, which is quite a remarkable accomplishment. Only 15 voted against her in the overall Senate vote. You know, former Federal Reserve Board chair and chairwoman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. This is obviously a great pick by President Biden, and she will do great. I'm confident.
Let us go on to, let's see, I got about 10 minutes here. So I want to go on to another story. The other big story yesterday was Joe Biden ending the military's transgender ban, part of a broad discrimination fight. The action reverses a Trump administration move and came less than a week after the new president issued another wide-ranging civil rights executive order. With Lloyd Austin, his new Secretary of Defense, and General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, beside him in the Oval Office, Mr. Biden signed the executive order restoring protections put in place in 2016 by President Obama that had opened up the ranks of the armed services to transgender people. He said from behind the Resolute desk, Joe Biden did, "What I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform." The president's action came less than a week after Mr. Biden began his presidency with another wide-ranging civil rights executive order directing the government to implement protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in the United States based on the Supreme Court's decision in Bostick versus Clayton County this past summer. Mike.
Yeah, you know, it's ironic that we have to have a presidential order to invoke what the Supreme Court decided. But anyway, this action in the military is a really important thing. There's an estimated 10 to 15,000 transgender individuals in the military. And Biden is right. America is stronger when it's inclusive. And the ban by Trump of transgender people in the armed forces really kept away a lot of significant talent to our service branches, and it kept brave volunteers away from serving their country. So this is a wonderful thing. It underscores the importance of a wide range of people being involved in our government efforts.
JP.
I thought it was obviously a smart thing for the president to do, and with his military leaders, and it kind of makes me think back to the days of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and when, you know, unfortunately, gay people weren't allowed to serve in our military. And I think this is one of those things where we'll look back in 20 years or 10 years and say, what a silly thing for us to argue about. You know, our military needs every volunteer, everybody willing to serve. And for anybody to be excluded for any reason is ridiculous.
Alan or Rosemary, any thoughts before we move on?
Well, can I jump in?
Absolutely.
Of course you can.
One of the many reasons that I wanted Joe Biden in was because of the chance to undo the petty cruelties of Trump. And this was one of them. As Mike said, there are only about 15,000 people affected by this miserable discriminatory order. And the reason was to prevent undue medical and care costs for the military to take care of transgender people, even though there's no evidence that they were a burden, that this was an issue, nothing at all. And that, of course, turned out to be the whole pattern of the Trump administration, that he would just make cruel and unnecessary judgments based on nothing. And so I'm very happy to see this go, even though it does not affect me in the least. That's what cruelty is. You know, if he had taken this action because his children had been beaten up by a transgendered soldier, okay, I give him some credit. But there was no reason whatsoever for it, just meanness and to play to your base.
Alan?
I agree. You know, the whole point here is that every person is made up of parts of good and parts of not so good. Trump decided early on that the way you do this is you divide and you conquer, and you get people to hate each other. You know, if somebody is not like you, then why would you do anything good about them? That's the Trump philosophy. Biden has a better way. I'm very impressed. I don't think he gains any political points. I think that's been said that he does. But I think, you know, his gain here is that he is doing what is right. And that means a great deal, I think.
All right. We have a few minutes here, and I want to move on we're getting through the stories today. Congratulations, everybody. This is good. The other story I had today is that the Inspector General will investigate whether any Justice Department officials improperly sought to help Trump overturn the election. The Justice Department's Inspector General announced yesterday an investigation into whether any current or former department officials tried to improperly, quote, alter the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. A broad review that follows the revelation that then-President Donald Trump considered replacing his acting attorney general with another appointee more amenable to his unfounded claims of voter fraud. Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz announced the review in a two-paragraph news release, although he noted his jurisdiction would be limited to allegations concerning the conduct of former and current DOJ employees, and he could not examine activity by other government agencies. The news release said the Inspector General's office would follow its normal process in releasing the results of its work publicly. So how much can this actually do, I guess, is the question.
Well, there is one thing here, Joe, that's very important, and that is that Biden said in the beginning that he wasn't going to mess with the Justice Department. He was going to let them run their own race. And whether that's so or not, I don't know. But all of a sudden, we're seeing that there really can be some reaction to some bad things by the Justice Department. Whether the signal – who is that?
That's totally me.
Oh.
Yeah,
I thought it was Rosemary in the Cuckoo Clock.
Revelry.
Yeah. Very rare for it to be Joe. Very rare.
Yeah, I don't understand it because it's off, it's on silent, and yet it's still going? I don't understand. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Well, good. Okay, I'm done because I forgot what I was going to say. I'm done.
Okay. Are you sure?
I think there's a couple other reasons besides what Alan has mentioned why this is notable. It's an inspector general. You'll remember that Trump was on the mission to defang the inspector general. So I was happy to see that. No matter what comes out of his report, the fact that he jumped right in and did this is interesting. And the other thing is, I continue to want the interview with Bill Barr. Did he know this was going on? Did he see Trump lying more and more, as we now know, and getting crazier and crazier, and said, I got to get out of here? I would love to know what he knows. Not that he'll ever tell us. But
wait for the book deal.
There's a lot of secrets tied up there. Yeah, wait for the book deal.
Well, apparently he did get out because he did know what some of this chicanery was all about. And that's why he quit. Just as there were people in the Justice Department and Moss who said that they wanted out because of Trump's last-minute potential for trying to overturn the election.
Well, one report I read was that Barr left right before Christmas, knowing that his aide or his assistant, Jeffrey Rosen, could stand up to that.
Exactly.
He's not going to go along with that. And that's why Trump wanted to put this guy, Jeffrey Clark, in place, because he'd do what Trump told him to do, and that is tell Georgia to invalidate the election.
I was also surprised, and maybe it's, I don't know. We talked about this yesterday, but I don't know, Mike and JP, you didn't get to weigh in on this, but of how powerful, at least for Trump, it was that everybody else in the room was going to get up and quit. You wonder why that mattered at that particular time.
I think the timing of the Georgia phone call tape being published and being available for everybody to hear, and the threat that all of these Justice Department leaders were going to quit en masse, I think the two just kind of said, this ain't going to work, and he decided not to do it.
Oh, I can't overturn an election.
I think his lawyers telling him he had criminal exposure might have played a role in that, too. Aside from
the fact
that he would have lost a terrible public.
Would Rudy have said that?
Who's his lawyer?
He would have slowed him down.
Yeah.
Butch told him.
With little Nipper the pup.
I didn't include it in our docket today, but I am fascinated by the Dominion story of them suing Rudy. I mean, wonder, like, will anything come of that, I wonder?
No, Rudy's going to spend a lot of money on lawyers.
Something could happen. He was they were defamed. Rudy did say it. If there's any justice, it may not be a billion and a half or whatever it is that he's getting, but he could get really slammed here and should be.
I guess that's the question. Is there any justice? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, already they're trying to disbar. Efforts are underway. People are calling for disbarment of Rudy Giuliani for his behavior after the election. And this is going to cost Giuliani a lot of money just to defend it. I mean, it's not right necessarily, but when a big power sues you for a lot of money, it's going to cost you money just to avoid paying it.
Right out of the Donald Trump playbook.
Right. It is. It's his playbook.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue in our last call with our terrific panel this morning, and we welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We will return after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our final round here in the roundtable panel. We just have about 15 minutes left to discuss the news of the day, and we welcome your letters. We still have time for those, as always. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. So we've been talking, of course, about a lot of issues, and we haven't touched on the coronavirus today yet. And the big story in coronavirus world is the new Brazil variant, which now has been identified in Minnesota. This, like the UK variant and other variants that have been found, is highly transmissible, very contagious, and some questions as to it going up against the vaccine, although they are far from making that determination as to it is of concern to scientists, but they have not said as to whether they know for sure if that the vaccine that is currently being distributed is able to overcome this particular variant. So, according to one research study published in the journal Science, estimated that 76% of the population in Brazil already have been infected by the coronavirus. That should have put them close to herd immunity. The new surge has raised fears that the variant has mutations that allow it to evade the human immune system. Evidence to support the hypothesis remains extremely limited, as I mentioned. So then go from Brazil to Minnesota, where the Department of Health there said that the case involved a Minnesota resident with a travel history to Brazil, and the variant was detected through genomic sequencing of random nasal swabs as part of a surveillance program. So there is that and what we make. And meanwhile, many people still waiting to get even an appointment to get a vaccine. In New York State, we just heard in the news earlier this hour about the plan that is being unrolled in Massachusetts, but it remains an issue. Alan.
Scares the hell out of me. It really does. You know, you're right. You know, people, we get put on a list. We're about to try to get it, and we don't know if we will, but the fact is that these producers of the vaccine are really up against it now. They're saying that the earlier one found in England was probably all right. The existing vaccine
right.
would handle it. But this Brazil thing is a whole other story. And all of a sudden we see the drug manufacturers saying, okay, so that we have to have a booster shot, which complicates the fact that so many Americans can't get the first shot, let alone a booster shot for the new thing. So it's a very scary proposition, and I don't know what else to tell you about it.
Mike.
It's hard to believe that there's only one person, and that person's in Minnesota, who has that variant. It's obviously here in the U.S., and it's a big concern. And I guess the broader reality of this is that, unlike we had maybe been led to think, or maybe allowed ourselves to think, that, you know, we're all going to get our vaccinations by May or June, and by the summer, everything is going to be hunky-dory. It is going to be a longer haul here, and it's as Governor Cuomo called it, a war. And this war is still very much underway, and it's not over, and we have not won.
More dead people than World War II. You're exactly right, Mike.
Yeah.
It's also scary. Rosemary. JP.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I agree with Alan. It's scary as hell. You know, I feel like we all kind of feel like we're looking at a little glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel with people getting vaccinated slowly but surely, and President Biden saying that we're going to try to vaccinate 100 million people in 100 days, and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine coming out. So I want to remain hopeful, although I agree, Mike, you know, it's not just one person in Minnesota that has the Brazilian. I mean, if we've detected one person, that means that there's tons of them, and every day that goes by, you know, we've seen this movie before. It replicates and multiplies, and other people have it. It is scary, and I am hoping for a big summer 2021. But you know, I can bring down those expectations, I suppose.
I'm getting mixed messages. I started double masking yesterday out of fear, but I also made trip reservations for December of this year, hoping that by then things will be somewhat back to normal. So for once, the jokes about Alan being a hypochondriac do not fit at all. He is right.
What?
Me?
What? Say what?
No. Well, and the thing is, I mean, we can sort of see the finish line a little bit, but there's some. I mean, I've just been listening between our news CAS and NPR and even Marketplace this morning talking about, you know, there are states that think that even the president saying that, you know, he hopes that everybody by the end of spring, but everybody who wants a shot can get a shot. JP mentioned the million shots and the first million shots a day over 100 days. And he upped that yesterday, saying he would hope in the first 100 days a million and a half people could be vaccinated every day. So all of that is really good news, and yet you still wonder whether, you know, there are those of us who are still waiting and not even on a list yet. I mean, I'm 53, so I'm not, I have to wait a while,
yeah,
which is
but
fine.
You're awfully tall.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah. That's right. The scientists show that if you're tall enough, you're actually taller than the virus. You can catch it.
Actually, that's not a joke. It's true. Being short is it correlates with a higher incidence. But it's just something about the randomness of this. My cousin, who's in her 50s, got an appointment. I can't get an appointment for my 95-year-old mother. My 101-year-old great aunt doesn't have an appointment. Doctors are saying, just wait, we'll get it soon. But we just really don't know. And it's partly that uncertainty that's so maddening. But I would like to point out that it was the questioning by the press about how come you're only aiming for a million, and Joe suddenly turned around and said, oh, no, it's a million and a half.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard that million and a half figure and coming during a week when, you know, our governor is going on TV saying, we're all out, we don't know when we're getting the next big shipment and how big it will be, and it's difficult to plan, and other governors are echoing that. I really want the president to be straight with us. I think that was one of the gifts that Cuomo gave us back in March and April. He told us the way it was. Wasn't happy information, but he was honest and straight with us. Meanwhile, Trump was saying, oh, it's all going to go away.
So,
it'll be a miracle, blah, blah, blah.
So can I turn
know.
That?
I mean, I'm skeptical.
Can I turn that I guess, a little bit? There's, I mean, yeah. the president, so we're at a million shots now, and New Yorkers still aren't getting the shot in great numbers.
Right.
So where does that problem lie? I'm baffled by the fact that as of last week, we were supposed to get 350,000 shots. We only got 200 and whatever thousand. And also, by the way, 91% of those were actually given. So why weren't the other 9% given? I don't understand that. And I also don't understand that if you are, like, why are we so behind it when other states are able to get the shots and give them? I don't get that.
And the governor said it on the radio yesterday. He said exactly what you said. I don't get it. Why are some so high and others are so low? Some hospitals only have 42%.
Yeah, but he's paid to figure that out. I'm not, you know.
I know. Yeah, no, I mean, I want to be optimistic like you are, JP. I really do, and I'm trying to be, but I also don't want to be given a line, like, just out of the blue from 1 million a day to 1.5 million a day, and I'm having difficulty trusting that because we've been lied to before.
Right.
And speaking of trust, the idea that a governor here in Massachusetts say, okay, if you're over 75, you're entitled to get a shot. Then go find it.
Well, that's right.
That's the whole point.
And that's the same thing here in New York. If you're entitled to it, great. But then those, like Rosemary's mother. But if you can't get it, then what the hell good is that?
You know, and there's also something, there's something unfair in the fact that you have to hunt and search for it, and mostly that's online. Doesn't that exclude a lot of people? You can't even go into some public libraries anymore to use the public computers to find the stuff.
It's just
terribly unfair.
Well, I was
saying, I'm not saying.
Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, nothing of the fact that wealth counts here, too. I mean, you know.
The Florida data is troubling.
Obviously, you got some money and you've gone to a major hospital somewhere, you have a better chance. And as the old saying goes, that ain't right.
No, and you're right, Mike. I mean, the Florida data, and people are traveling. People are going out of state because there are states especially some of the just happen to be red states, have a lot more of the vaccine, and also are opening up just to clinics where anyone can go in, and they're not asking any information. They're just giving the shot out. So if you're willing to wait 2 hours in your car, you can get the shot.
I'm not saying that it should be this way, but I think that searching online and by the phone, if you're really excited about getting it, I don't know that that's enough. I would, if you're really interested in getting it, my parents did this in Georgia, go to two or three pharmacies a few times a week, go to a few different health clinics a few times a week, get to know those people, say, I really want the shot, put me on the list. And when you do that by meeting other people, I know you're not, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive because you don't want to be interacting with people because you don't want to get the virus, but doing it online and on the phone, I think you're setting yourself up for failure if you're looking for the vaccine. I'd be going in person to pharmacies, in person to health clinics. Let it be known to these people in person. I really, really want the vaccine, and you will get it before those that are just working the phone and online.
I mean, I've been helping a neighbor trying to get the shot for them, and they're in their 80s, and they're trying to figure out how to get the shot. And so we put all the information in, and obviously they are able, as Alan said, they're cleared to get the shot. It's just then where. So we put in their zip code, and which is, you know, where I live, and they told us that the closest place to get it, oh, you have one right nearby, and it's in Plattsburgh. Well, good Lord.
How far is Plattsburgh?
Well, it's it's a 2.5 hour drive.
A lot of listeners in Plattsburgh.
We do, but yeah. with a little asterisk that says, oh, by the way, you may not be guaranteed a shot when you get up there, which, like, okay, so I'll bring my passport and hope that I can get there.
It's disturbing because they say, go here. But what we need also, Joe, I think we need people like you assigned to work with people who don't have access to or are not internet savvy and don't have access. Like for the ACA, they had these advocates that
right.
you could call, and they would plug all your information in and get you into the program. Well, I think that the government needs to get people like that, and they could do it by the phone. They could get volunteers to do it by phone so it wouldn't expose anybody. And I think there has to be some kind of advocacy for these people who cannot just click a couple of times on their phone and find out that the only place they can go is Plattsburgh or Potsdam had some openings.
Yeah, right.
You may have set up a whole new, occupation. Somebody could make some money on that.
Well, I don't, you know, and you're not even, it's like these poor people are calling up and they're in tears because, you know, my computer is asking me for second party authentication. You're like, oh, for God's sakes, right. just give them the damn shot. I mean,
can you believe that?
Come on. That's all right, everybody, we're out of time. My thanks to the entire group. Alan, thank you so much. Mike, Rosemary, and JP, you're the best. Thank you. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.